Welcome to Education Today. Our program deals with one of the most important and controversial topics of our time, education, a multi-billion dollar enterprise that touches the lives of every citizen every day. For over 15 years, we've talked with educators, students, and others with a stake in education in an effort to explore the latest trends and issues in the world of education, as well as to monitor the ever-changing landscape. I'm your host, Dan Angelo, and today my guest is Dr. Howard N. Levinson, author of the recently released book, Smart But Feeling Dumb, New Understanding and Dramatic Treatment for Dyslexia. Dr. Levinson, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Glad to have you here. Now, before we get started, I want to point out for our listeners' sake that we have a lot of professional educators on the program, and usually the title doctor implies a PhD, but you are actually a medical doctor.
Yes.
And that brings a slightly different set of dynamics to the conversation, particularly when we're talking about something that affects students in their educational experience, like dyslexia.
Because I'm a psychiatrist and neurologist, our aim, of course, is the same, to help children and even adults with the problem, but we tend to go after the cause of the problem as well as the medical treatment more than merely remediating a disorder.
Well, and from what I've seen of the book, you have a very interesting and atypical approach to that, to the treatment of dyslexia, which we're going to explore and talk about. But before we do, if you wouldn't mind sharing with our listeners who may or may not be acquainted with dyslexia, what is it that we're talking about here?
Well, dyslexia was a disorder that was discovered some 800 years ago, 100 and maybe 10 years ago, and it was thought to be a severe reading disorder in which bright children couldn't understand the letters and words they were looking at. And this was modeled after brain-injured individuals who had a specific lesion in a special area of the thinking brain.
Mm-hmm.
Make a long story short, after some 35 years of research in the examination and treatment of over 35,000 children and adults with learning problems of various types, ADD, and all sorts of different named disorders, I found that over 20% of the population, children and adults, suffer from a simple inner ear fine-tuning impairment. And what this does is it sends signals, scrambled signals, to different parts of the thinking brain that's perfectly normal. And as a result, it creates not just severe reading disorders, which dyslexia was thought to be, but even mild degrees of reading problems, and even compensated forms where individuals can read extremely well, but will have some difficulty with one or more of the following areas: difficulty with writing, spelling, math, memory, speech, sense of direction and time, grammatical detail, simple periods and capitals, difficulty with concentration, activity level, things that are and symptoms that are known characteristically as ADD or ADHD. It will also affect self-esteem, which is why the book is called Smart But Feeling Dumb, so that the brighter you are with this problem, the more frustrated you get and the dumber you feel. It also affects body image, so that handsome children feel ugly and very often are continually trying to change their appearance. Unfortunately, some by plastic surgery that's completely unnecessary. Individuals invariably will have some difficulty with fine, gross, or rhythmic motor coordination or balance. And I'll go into this later on in even greater detail. In addition, I discovered that there's a whole slew of psychosomatic symptoms that previously were never tied to this disorder: headaches, dizziness, motion sickness, ringing in the ear, vague abdominal complaints. Also, a whole slew of phobias: fears of elevators, escalators, moving vehicles, fears of heights. So that when I talk of dyslexia, I talk not just of a severe reading disorder, but a whole syndrome of symptoms. all of which stem from a simple and medically treatable fine-tuning impairment within the inner ear, so that individuals can be extremely bright. Their thinking brains can have great processing capacity, just like watching a television picture, for example, from a great TV screen. But if the signal on any channel is coming in scrambled visually and or acoustically, no matter how gifted the individual is, no matter how expensive the TV set is, if the signal is coming in scrambled, they'll have difficulty on that particular wavelength. Now, this was never understood before, and most people had the simple-minded concept that dyslexia was merely a severe impairment in reading of a conceptual nature, and that's the last thing that's so. In fact, it's like comparing diabetes by analogy to a comatose state and missing all the non-comatose diabetics, which form, fortunately, 99% of the disorder.
Well, the program is dealing with issues of education, and I'm particularly curious. I mean, we know historically and just in general, you know, that a child who is identified as having as being dyslexic is going to have a harder time and is going to have to find some ways of compensating in the classroom environment. What would be the kind of things that your treatment might bring to this that might change that equation?
Well, first of all, by understanding that we're dealing with a specific neurophysiological problem, sort of a specific area of the reflex center of the brain, the inner ear and its supercomputer, it's called the cerebellum, or the fine tuner of the brain, we can now medically screen for this disorder before children start to fail. We don't have to wait for them to be two or more years behind in reading or writing or spelling or math, each of which, of course, has a different name, and I'll go into it. There's hundreds of different symptoms that comprise this syndrome and a score of differently named disorders, all interconnected, interrelated, and all caused by this fine-tuning inner ear problem. Not only can we screen for this problem before major symptoms arise, we can pre-treat it and medically treat it after symptoms arise with simple inner ear improving medications, some over-the-counter, and certain nutrients that enhance the functioning of the inner ear. Now, in a simple way, by improving the signal scrambling, by fine-tuning the signals going to different parts of the brain in different parts of the balance and coordination symptoms, we can immediately get an 85% improvement rate. Also, there are certain nutrients and even medications that can increase the processing capacity of the thinking brain, so that if you think about it, for example, you're watching a drifting television channel and the picture is scrambled, the lines are going through and wiggly and dancing around and blurry, and the sound is coming in out of sequence to the visual input and blurry. And imagine a medication or some technique that chemically fine-tunes that channel or all the channels that are drifting, and all of a sudden an individual can see and appreciate more clearly the message coming in and can respond to it much better. So that by medically treating the core of the problem, children can benefit significantly more by all the available educational techniques and all the available non-medical techniques that have thus far been used to improve this disorder. Not only that, within the book, for example, there's a few pages right up front. It's called a self-help test, where I list all the different symptoms that qualitatively define this disorder, so that if one or more of the symptoms are recognized, there's almost a sure bet that they have this inner ear dyslexia syndrome. Now, I also want to tell your listeners that dyslexia goes by a lot of different names. Dyslexia, learning disability, attention deficit disorder. Dyspraxia means poor coordination. Dysgraphia means poor writing. Dysphagia means poor speech, stuttering, stammering, articulation problems, enunciation problems, and also, as I said, a whole slew of phobias and anxiety problems overlap, as well as poor coordination. It also goes by different titles, developmental apraxia, developmental dyspraxia, pervasive developmental delay, Asperger syndrome, where individuals have difficulty understanding the facial expression and emotions of others. In this book, I devote a whole chapter to recognizing that Asperger syndrome, which is individuals who can be very, very bright but have difficulty reading their own emotions and feelings as well as those of others, so that you get an idea of the breadth and depth of this disorder and why it affects so many individuals in so many different ways. If educators would be able to understand the full dimensions of this disorder, they can apply their techniques so much more effectively. And by applying their techniques to individuals who are now medically treated, their input is now much more efficiently processed. It's remembered better. It's understood better. It's associated better with other areas and associations, so that the outcome is infinitely improved over the present circumstance, where we treat these individuals intuitively by different educational techniques, depending only and mainly on the skill of the tutor and the educator.
If you just happen to join us, you're listening to Education Today. My name is Dan Angelo, and my guest today is Dr. Harold N. Levinson, author of the recently released book, Smart But Feeling Dumb, New Understanding and Dramatic Treatment for Dyslexia. Dr. Levinson, we've been sort of talking about your approach to treatment, but we really haven't gotten down to specifics. You mentioned some over-the-counter drugs and some nutrients. What exactly is it that we're talking about here?
Okay. Simply put, I can temporarily render any of your listeners dyslexic. All I have to do is spin them around till they're dizzy. They won't be able to read straight, write straight, talk straight, walk straight. Their balance will be off. Their coordination will be off. Their rhythm will be off. If they were adults, they wouldn't be able to pass the drunken driving test. Now, suppose we give these individuals, before we sort of make them dizzy, anti-motion sickness medications, the kind, for example, that are out there like Dramamine and whatnot for motion sickness.
Mm-hmm.
By pre-treating them, we prevent not just the dizziness or the motion sickness, we prevent the circuits from becoming scrambled or dizzy, quote-unquote. And thus, we can prevent the dyslexic syndrome from appearing or minimizing. Once the dyslexic syndrome is there, namely the reading and the writing and the spelling and the math problems, once we treat the fine-tuning impairment with these very same medications and nutrients, and there are other drugs, of course, that are of a prescription nature, determined by the diagnostic evaluation that we do, we can chemically fine-tune the signaling mechanism. Well, just picture, for example, you have a $1 million Cray computer, and our brain is certainly infinitely more complex than that, and somebody is inputting scrambled signals. It doesn't matter how bright that computer is, it's going to mess up the output.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody could just chemically or mechanically, of course, or electronically, if it's a computer, straighten out the signals, we got an amazing output possible from that Cray or gifted computer. The same with the mind and the brain. It's an amazing instrument, but it has to receive clear signaling in certain time and spacing sequences in order for it to output properly. And this is what these simple inner ear improving antihistamines and other types of medications and nutrients do.
Now, you mentioned fine-tuning the approach. This is certainly not something that you would advise us to, if we had a dyslexic member of our family or a friend, to go home and recommend that they start taking Dramamine and antihistamines to improve their situation. So failing self-medication, where would you advise a person who is suffering from dyslexia to go to experience this kind of treatment and this kind of approach to solving the problems?
Well, to date, most individuals came to my center in Great Neck, New York, that's Long Island, and we were able to diagnose and successfully treat them. But as I said before, I discovered by accident, by attempting to treat individuals with these medications for reading and writing, suddenly their phobias disappeared. They were no longer afraid of heights or elevators, and it stood to reason, and it suddenly made sense, that the 90% of most phobias are inner ear determined. That's why there's height phobias, difficulty with balance. There's coordination phobias, difficulty driving a car or riding a bike. There are motion-related phobias, fears of moving elevators, escalators, trains, planes, buses. There are speech phobias. The speech coordination process isn't working correctly, and so many have stage fright of various types or another. What I'm trying to say is that mechanisms that can produce the typical academic symptoms when they hit the cognitive areas of the brain will produce phobias when they hit the anxiety centers of the brain. And when I started treating these individuals, many couldn't come to the office. They were afraid to leave the house. They were afraid to drive. They were afraid to fly. What I developed was a technique for those who couldn't come to my office whereby I could treat them via telephone consultations together with medical clearance from their physicians, so that it's also now possible to treat people in different parts of the world.
Interesting.
Once we are able to have a proper consultation with medical supervision and clearance wherever they happen to be. And again, the results are close to what I get into my office. Not exactly, but we can get close to an 80% improvement rate.
Interesting. Now, in your treatment of people with dyslexia, have you found that there is a certain age group that are more responsive? In other words, is it better to capture a kid at the ripe old age of 8 or 9 in second or third grade before this becomes too entrenched? Or is it really pretty much equally effective across the age spectrum?
The amazing thing is that treating them at any age can get almost the same results, providing emotional scarring hasn't set in. In other words, you can start out with a physiological problem that becomes psychologically contaminated. You can improve the physical problem, but the psychological damage that's already done requires amazing amounts of treatment. Let me go on to explain what I mean by that. Many children and adults who don't have proper schooling and proper parenting and proper treatment drop out of school. They drift into poor company. They drift into drugs. They drift into crime. Many, unfortunately, are arrested. Many drift into alcoholism. Many become compulsive gamblers because compulsions and obsessions can be part of this problem. Many are impulsive. They don't learn by experience, and so they repeat the same errors over and over again. Many have difficulty establishing relationships with individuals. Their marriages are very often doomed to failure. They can't sit still. They can't stay put. They move from place to place, from person to person, from marriage to marriage, and it interferes with their child-rearing capabilities, even if they still love the individuals, they're derailed from what they want to do. Many feel as imposters, even if they succeed. I can't tell you how many gifted, successful individuals come to my office for treatment. And when I tell them, look how great you've done. It's amazing how successful you've become despite the disorder. In other words, they drove themselves to succeed despite their problem in order to prove to themselves and everyone else they weren't as dumb as they felt. And many said, anybody that thinks I'm smart is just dumber than I am. They don't internalize the improvement. So that it creates a tremendous amount of occupational difficulties, accident proneness of jobs, alcoholism. So it disrupts every possible area of life. And the aim is to get this problem early before these individuals' lives are destroyed emotionally and occupationally and socially and by marriage and having children they're ill-equipped to take care of. And all of this is possible. As I always say, that before this huge deficit problem that we now experience, that if we can cure the dyslexic syndrome and disorder, we can wipe out the national deficit disorder. Now, I'm not so sure that's possible, but at least we can make a big dent in it.
What I find fascinating is that students in schools oftentimes go undiagnosed. Your book is titled Smart But Feeling Dumb, but I think that oftentimes the educational system labels these kids as being dumb despite the fact that they may well, in fact, be smart.
And they call them lazy. They consider them lazy. The smarter they are and the more misunderstood they are, the lazier they're thought to be because a superficial understanding can't explain why these bright individuals keep failing over and over again when they have IQs greater than the individuals observing and trying to tutor them.
Well, you've just touched on something that I wanted to ask you about. Does this syndrome, this problem of dyslexia, reflect in a student's standardized testing like an IQ test? And can the treatment actually demonstrate an improvement in that test if, in fact, the dyslexia is affecting it to begin with?
Number one, I'd say the IQ test not only measures the IQ it's intended to, but the anxiety and the fear of failure as well as the dyslexic condition, so that it brings it down probably an average of about 20% on average, number one. I even have had cases that were bright and gifted individuals that were diagnosed as retarded. And I had a case, for example, a billionaire's grandson. He couldn't even get him into a private school with all his money in giftedness because the kid was once labeled retarded on an IQ test.
Hmm.
And the reason he was retarded is individuals not only have difficulty processing what they see but what they hear. This kid couldn't understand properly and rapidly enough the oral instructions and the visual instructions required to perform adequately on an IQ test or many other tests. So he came in with a 60 or 70 IQ. Once I treated him, his IQ jumped to 125, 130, something like that, in a period of about 4 to 6 months. Now, his IQ didn't jump.
Right.
His ability, the ability of the test to properly measure his IQ jumped significantly. The test became more reliable once the ability of the child to take the test improved. So that I never do an IQ test because I don't have to. I can pretty much, having examined 35,000 children and their parents and whatever, I pretty much have a good feel for what the approximate IQ is. Now, I don't have to tutor individuals, so my aim is just to get a rough indicator of what the IQ is, a definite diagnosis, which we can render 100% of the time, pretty much in one visit. And we can then, as I said, get an 85% improvement. By getting an 85% improvement, we can raise the testing IQ probably 20%. It doesn't mean the IQ is really, really improved.
Mm-hmm.
It means that children and adults are able to utilize their IQ much more efficiently and effectively and realistically.
Now, your treatment using these drugs and nutrients that are enhancing the inner ear's ability and the sending of the messages to the brain, how much time does it take before you see significant improvement in a case once you start treatment?
let me tell you with the best possible news. How about almost an hour? I've had children, for example, and this is hard to believe, but it's in Smart But Feeling Dumb, coming to the office unable to read. They were diagnosed and they were treated in order to test them before and after treatment. On the way home, the children were reading the highway signs, and once they got to the airport, they were reading the airport signs in terms of what gate and what airline to get to. And so that it can happen very, very quickly. Sort of like what could happen instantaneously watching a scrambled TV set once the picture clears up. It doesn't take long for a bright individual to visually and acoustically recognize the signaling. Once the signals are clear, it can happen immediately. Now, on average, one can really start to appreciate the ramifications of the improvement within a week or so, depending on the medication and the combination of the medications that are needed. Now, we're not just talking about improvements in reading. We're talking about improvements in the whole syndrome that may characterize any given individual. So this individual may have difficulty with balance and coordination. It may affect the sports. A funny thing is, I treated a child, and his father, a very successful businessman, came for treatment, who also had trouble reading. And he called me up delighted. And I said, John, your reading is much better. He said, I don't care about my reading. My golf score dramatically improved. So that a lot of times you treat the reading problem and a phobia that's related to it that you didn't think improves, or a sport function improves, or a balance or coordination or rhythmic function associated with improves. And that way you get a better picture that we're not just dealing with a reading problem or a learning problem or a cognitive problem. We're dealing with a tremendous problem, the worst of which is self-esteem. So that if you can improve the self-esteem of an individual, you've accomplished a lot. And you cannot really improve the self-esteem by trying to compliment an individual. A bright individual doesn't believe compliments. They're from Texas, or Missouri, I guess.
Yes.
Believing. And once they start to feel better physiologically, once they start reading better and writing and spelling and performing better, they instinctively start to feel better. And many an individual I've described in the book will say, you know, Mom, I feel I got a brain now, which meant they felt brainless before but couldn't verbalize it. Many didn't know what normal was. They just knew that they couldn't perform. And the brighter they were, intuitively to recognize that, you know, I should be able to perform just like my friends, but I can't. There has to be something deadly wrong with me. And they couldn't be dissuaded from that impression until they were able to function much better. And as I told you before, individual success on their own is no guarantee that their inner self-esteem will improve. As I said, many a gifted individual who has succeeded well beyond our expectations felt like an imposter.
Well, Dr. Levinson, I'm afraid we're just about out of time. The book is Smart But Feeling Dumb, New Understanding and Dramatic Treatment for Dyslexia. Is there some place on the Internet that our listeners might be able to go to find some information?
Yes, I suggest they either contact my website. It's dyslexia, D-Y-S-L-E-X-I-A, online.com, or my email, drlevinson@aol.com. We have an 800 number, 1-800-334-READ. So by contacting any one of these sites or numbers, individuals can get much more information in a way of getting the book.
Outstanding. Our guest today has been Dr. Harold N. Levinson, author of the recently released book, Smart But Feeling Dumb, New Understanding and Dramatic Treatment for Dyslexia. Dr. Levinson, thanks for being with us on Education Today.
Thanks so much.
Education Today is a project of Quarter Moon Radio in cooperation with the University of California and is recorded in the studios of KUCR-FM 88.3 Riverside with production assistance from Walter Douglas. Opinions expressed on this show belong solely to those who express them. This is your host, Dan Angelo. Thank you for listening, and be sure to be with us next week at this same time for more Education Today.